Okay. Next topic is the insurance project, and Jennifer Weiner is going to lead this off.
Thanks, Leslie. In February, the staff presented memo 58K and agenda paper 3K, which was a refresher on the presentation models. In the March meeting, we also presented agenda paper 3A and memo 60A, which was alternative presentation models. This paper is now, a couple months later, agenda paper 3A and 70A. And in this paper, we have considered the feedback that we received on the alternative presentation models that we brought to the last meeting, that the board asked us to reach out to the insurance working group and to users to get their feedback on the four or five alternatives we had. And we used that feedback for our recommendations included in this paper. It's important to note, because I know several of the board members will raise this as we go through this, this paper does not include presentation of the statement of financial position, so the balance sheet, does not include how we're going to treat reinsurance and whether we're going to gross it up, and it does not include one of the biggest items on unbundling of deposit components until we get that the wording down and are all cleared on what exactly will be unbundled. But we did want to get a baseline of the statement of comprehensive income in this paper. In interest of time, I'm not going to walk through all the things in the paper. We've done it in two previous meetings, the advantages, disadvantages. However, I do want to just make a few statements. What we've heard from preparers and from users and, you know, the comment letters coming out of the exposure draft and the discussion paper was that the vast majority of respondents want volume information on the statement of comprehensive income. While we have recognized also that the margins that the boards had come up with in the summarized margin approach, coming down to an underwriting margin, is also important in a lot of the feedback we received and also in looking at companies' supplemental financial information that they issue with their financial statements today. And so we have come up with what we believe, as the staff recommendation, incorporates the volume information and incorporates the margin information. And some people have been talking about it as this was going from a black box to a black hole, and we believe that this solves that comment that is coming out of the users. So what we have done, and it really is the staff recommendation is example one, if that's easier to look at than the actual words of the staff recommendation. But what we've done is we've broken out the underwriting margin separately for contracts applying the building block approach and those that would potentially apply the modified approach. The boards could decide, you know, we really just wanted to get down the line items, and that's what we'll talk about and what's being presented. The board obviously can talk about whether to combine that and have the breakout between the two different models in the footnotes. However, some of the users, what we've heard is they do look at them sort of as distinct businesses and different key performance indicators. For the modified approach, we did include premium earned as the volume information on the face financials. This is not expected to be materially different than a premium due figure. As for those contracts that would fall within this approach, and this is consistent with revenue recognition. On the building block approach, however, we went with a number or a title that's really premium due. This is not premium earned. There has been a lot of concern around what does this number represent. The staff has recommended that this is not presented as revenue, not listed as revenue. However, the premium due is what is expected to be due in that particular year. This is what many of the users and preparers are used to. We did try to find a premium earned number and did lots of different calculations, including the incremental change in, you know, allocating the premium over incremental change in the benefits year after year after year. It gets does not work for all types of contracts, especially those that have cash values associated with those and other moving parts. And there were some instances where we ran into where the premiums were actually greater than the consideration. So it just, the results did not look right. So we did default back to premium due, and that is what companies have been using today. We also did break out line items for claims and benefits incurred and expenses incurred, and then also variance adjustments. This variance adjustment is meant to be the difference between the amount that's expected for the current year and the amounts that are actually incurred, paid, whatever you want to call it, in that current year. We believe by doing this variance analysis for the premiums, claims, and expenses, one, it wipes out the plug that was there, and people say, well, what is this plug? Also, we feel that this does give a lot more information to users of the financial statements to say, what did you expect and what actually happened in that year? And this is also one of the recommendations that we heard from several groups, including EFRAG and ACLI and the HUB group in different forms, was to have that also on the face financials. The line item for change in assumption is for the future assumptions. This did not contemplate the unlocking of the residual margin. However, you would still need this number for any change in assumptions above and beyond that unlocking of the residual margin. We also did keep the release of the risk adjustment and the release of the composite margin residual margin in there, which we felt was important and does give a good information. We broke out other activity. We also heard from the boards that it was very important to have investment income broken out separately versus having it in with the underwriting margin, and that is the presentation suggestion, as well as having the accretion on the liability to be with the investment income. And several board members have indicated several times that they thought that was very important. One of the other things that you'll see on here is that we did break out the change in the discount rate separately from other items, and sort of put that kind of a below-the-line type item where it comes down, and we can discuss whether that item belongs up in the investment income, belongs in, you know, if there should be a profit total before that item or not. Obviously, the board still need to discuss OCI and other items, but we did hear loudly from many users that they would like to see that item broken out. So with sort of laying out the different items and how we are presenting it, open it up to the boards for discussion.
Okay. Thanks. Comments? Questions? Mark?
Thanks. First of all, I just want to commend you guys. This is a great analysis, and I like the way we've been tackling this through redeliberations iteratively and as we go along to reach out to the Investment Working Group and others to try to get a sense forward. I feel like we've made a massive step forward since the ED, and you know, so I think that's great. I just have a couple of questions. You mentioned in your tee-up and in paragraph 45 of the memo that premiums due wouldn't be materially different from premiums earned under the modified approach. Yet, you've got an inconsistency. In the modified approach, you're showing premiums earned, and under the building block, you're showing premiums due. So I'm just curious as to why you didn't just do premiums due for both. Not that I'm recommending that. I'm just...
I think that the premiums earned number is a well-known number. It's one that we've heard from a lot of the users that if they're calculating the combined loss ratio, LAE ratio, combined loss ratio, whatever, that they want the premium earned number. We have been told, and also we just don't think that the due would be significantly different from the earned. We did talk to some companies about, well, can you live with going to due? And I think there was a pushback, and there was the comment of really, well, if that really is representing something that's the same as what revenue recognition is, should we move back from that just to be consistent with the life side?
I mean, I agree. I think premiums earned is the more relevant number. I just, you know, think in the basis, you should probably go through that discussion. I'm going to make a case for example two as opposed to example one. As my preference, I think under the building block approach, this, you know, example one is certainly better than we were in the ED, and it does give you some transparency. But what you have under example one with premiums due, then actual benefits, actual expenses, and then this big expected net change in the liability of 690, my first question is going to be, what's the driver of that? Example two is actually what shows me the driver of that, and then I'm able to see under example two that the driver of it is benefits paid while premiums and expenses were as planned, and that gives me a better sense of what I'm actually able to do with that information, as opposed to just having the one big net number. You know, so I'd make a case for example two.
Okay. Elka?
I agree with Mark that we've made a huge step forward in also reaching out to the insurance working group and others. And I think the first decision we have to take is, do we want to stay to a margin approach, or do we want to go back what I would call a traditional comprehensive income approach, which is focused firstly on volume information and has additional supplemental information either on face or probably for clarity sake in the notes on development of any margin, any increment, any transparency on any changes on certain of the numbers. I have to say I got entirely lost in the appendices, and I've got a feeling that we have some serious double counting in. I didn't have the time, which is my problem, to just map it with a traditional comprehensive income statement for P&C, where I don't see any need for any change because all the KPIs you get as of today, you need additional information about change in reserve and things like that. But I think we heard clear and loud there's no need for change for P&C being in our wording the modified approach. On the building block approach, my sense is that we have perhaps shaded the black into a dark gray, but not really achieved much because we are now separating underwriting from investment income, where both have to be combined back. I have once in a while a problem with pluses and minuses, so I would go back probably first to saying, are we considering to go back to a traditional volume-based approach, and then sort out which additional information we need on margins, and I would very much like staff to map it to traditional presentation of some of the composite writers and or a traditional life insurance presentation, because my sense was I don't understand it, and I'm always a bit nervous when I'm not understanding a paper to vote on it. The other argument is, and I agree with, there seems to be a difference between premium earned and premium due. Now, I am, first of all, I couldn't put it in one sentence. Secondly, and I've just a sense for difference there. Secondly, we are the industry, and I think also users are used to having a premium written and a premium earned. I'm not seeing the merit of now inventing a premium due in between. And to that extent, I would try hard to stay to premium earned, which is close to revenue recognition. Sounds more negative
life,
than it is. I'm not intelligent enough to understand it totally.
For life contracts, you're saying? Premium earned?
Even for life, you could try to come up with something that's not just premium written, but premium earned. But that's something which is second order to me, whether you want to start with premium at all.
So we did have this mapped in the last presentation, the alternative presentations. We did have this mapped to a traditional, and we can show you that. So this does map and would get the same numbers. Premium earned from a life perspective is very difficult. So you take the single premium immediate annuity, and somebody pays you $100,000 or single premium deferred annuity, whatever, and you get $100,000 up front, or even let's just say a single premium whole life. $100,000 up front, I'm not going to pay out the $5 million on your life for 60 years from now, talking about some of the younger people. How do I earn that $100,000? We've tried to play with, do you earn that $100,000 over your expected 60 years? Is more of that up front, or is that more up in the back end? Because when is your real risk? Your risk isn't as much up front, so do you weight it more towards the end with when you think somebody has the higher chance of dying? And when we looked at all of the different types of products, it was hard to get, it was almost impossible working with industry too, to get to a methodology that could get us to a true premium earned amount. But also to your point, Elke, on the written and the due is pretty comparable. The reason why we didn't use the word written is because of the model itself and having the expected cash flows all the expected cash inflows and all the expected cash outflows. There was some confusion in talking with people that the written would be all of the expected cash inflows that you wrote through that contract boundary, not just those that you expected for that current year. And so we were trying to get to what did you expect that was going to be due in that current year.
Okay, did you want to get in? Peter?
I'm just very worrisome to invent new terminology into it. But again, the first question is, are we going for volume or margins?
I think there are two basic issues that have caused us problems whenever we've looked at the presentation. One is the defining this top line number, and the second is the plug, which Mark was really referring to, the big lump of something that's hard to explain. On the revenue number, I'm convinced really that there's no way of coming up with an earned premium type number for life. I think there's just such a range of different things, and I think I'm not sure it's even possible to do it. I think if it were possible to do it, maybe we'd have tried to do that in the measurement model. But I think if we try to do it for presentation, we'd inevitably end up having to create a parallel measurement model. And I think having two measurement models is one too many, really. So I think the choice we have, really, is either to drop the volume information entirely or to put it on the face and accept that it's not really perfect. It doesn't really look that much like revenue. And it depends on the product mix. In some cases, it'll look more like revenue. In others, it'll look less like revenue. And I'm really coming to the view that probably we should have volume information on the face and that we should really supplement that with some note disclosure that breaks that down by product type so that you couldn't say that the total volume number that you've got is consistent across all the products, but at least within the products there'll be a bit more consistency and the users can look at that and draw some conclusions from that.
Thank you. Is it Philippe or Tom?
I'm generally supportive of the approach. My concern is, and I'm being influenced by the fact that I've read recently that many of the users of these financial statements are not specialists in the industry. And I look at these financial statements, and there are words in here that if I'm not a specialist, I don't understand remotely. You got experience adjustment different than change in assumptions. Experience adjustment have to do with the current period and the change in assumptions with future periods. How's anybody going to figure that out? And how are they going to figure out premiums earned versus premiums due? Premiums earned seems like a revenue number that we have in the modified approach. A premium due is something subtly different. It's Greek to me.
But do you think the terminology is fixable?
Yes. Okay. And so what I'm leading to is I think we need to be beginning to work at someone who doesn't understand the model we're building, picking this up and being able to understand what's being written here. All right. So I'm supportive of the approach, but I am extremely strongly supportive more of example two than example one. Because example two really is talking about differences in cash flow expectations versus what occurred. And if I look at example one, I'm going to start feeling like that is really a premium earned, a revenue number. And what's really happening in that block in the middle of example two is a difference between cash flow expectations and actual. And I think that's far better. And I think we need to make it very clear that's a difference between cash flow expectations and what was expected. And maybe that will help us understand what the word experience adjustment means in the end. But I think we need to relabel experience adjustment and relabel change in assumptions so somebody picking this up can figure it out. And they really figure out in that block this is really cash flow information, not revenue information.
Okay. Thank you. Stephen?
Well, I don't like either one or two, and the reason is that you've got two sections to the income statement with modified and building block, which sort of relates to non-life and life, but doesn't. And you have a non-life company that will have most of it under modified and some under building block, and there'll be another analysis have to be given in the notes by product type. So I just don't like having two sections. I think it makes it too long, too complicated. So I think we need to find a method where the two approaches, modified building block, can be presented in the same way, can be added together, and then we can have all the disaggregation either by methodology or by product type, whatever it is, in the notes. I think that we do need to start with a top line volume number, so premiums earned or due. Ideally earned, but if it cannot be done, then it would have to be earned or due according to what's available, what can be done for that particular product. I think that the other thing I found very confusing about method two, which some people like, is in the building block approach, you start off with a margin, and then you have the premiums due underneath. That's sort of like starting with profit and then having revenue below profit, which I find sort of struggle. I know it's a variance analysis type approach, but I think this would be very confusing to anybody else. So I think the top line has to be the premiums. So therefore, going to method three, which is much closer to what I feel, the problem with method three is that we then have sort of two margins. You have premiums, some negative numbers getting to an 83, and that 83 is not really the profit, it's just an experience adjustment, and on average you would expect that to be zero. And then you add in the profit as a separate line, which again is extremely confusing. I'd make it much closer to what people see in every other company. You start off with a top line, premiums in this case, you deduct some numbers and you get to a profit. Then you deduct some more numbers and you get to a smaller profit. And that just is very simple. And I've already provided staff with my version of number three that does exactly that.
So building on your point, one of the questions I had was, keeping in mind that the scope of this is not limited to insurance companies, right, it could be some of these long-term fixed-price contracts that I would agree with.
I've got one more point, sure. And that is that I would not require any of this, because for a bank with insurance, I think you need to be able to allow them to put in the one line, the margin for insurance, and then do the analysis in the notes. So I wouldn't The minimum requirements I would have in this would be similar to the minimum requirements we have in IAS-1, which allows for a lot of flexibility about how companies present it, because we have to deal with the composites, the life, the non-life, the bank assurers, and everybody else, and there are different ways in which these things need to be presented.
Okay.
Well, I agree with the recommendations that Peter put on the table, as well as the ones that Steve has. We've been exchanging some emails and talking about how these examples tie in with recommendations from some of the industry representatives. And I agree with Steve. I think three seems to have the most appeal more broadly from some of the industry recommendations I've read. But it also ties into the last point that Steve and Leslie were talking about, which is we have to keep in mind that in many cases insurance companies are composites, or they may be part of a broader financial conglomerate, or as you just mentioned, because now we're dealing with insurance contracts, not insurance enterprises, that I think there has to be some degree of flexibility. So I think an approach which is going to reflect something that, as Tom said, is going to resonate with just not just the insurance specialist, but a professional investor, I think is what we need to strive for. I think what we have here in example three is moving in the right direction. I think it's very important. When we started this project, we talked about trying to make the understandability of how an insurance company makes money more clear, especially to the generalist. And in that respect, I think it's very critical that whatever we have on the face of the income statement or statement of comprehensive income is unbundled, disaggregated, whatever word you want to use, in the notes that's going to illustrate profitability from taking underwriting risk, profitability from investment activities, and the cost of all that, your margins on expenses. And that needs to be disaggregated, obviously, not only by type of contracts, but type of products. So, and that seems to be, you know, well supported by the analyst community. But trying to do too much on the statement of comprehensive income is one thing they've counseled us not to do. And I think that is something that we should listen to, rather than trying to put everything on the statement of comprehensive income.
Thank you. Is it Darrell?
In general, I'm an income statement minimalist, and so therefore I'm in agreement with Stephen. I prefer example three. I think that otherwise the statement just gets too complicated and there's too many things on it. However, I appreciate the desire to have a breakdown between the modified approach and the building block approach, and also the additional information that Mark referred to there in example two. So I guess my question is, I just wanted to confirm with the staff that if we were to lean toward example three, would the staff contemplate that additional breakdown detail would be disclosed in the notes?
Yeah, absolutely. That information would need to be disclosed in the notes, the change in, obviously between those applying the building block approach and the modified approach, and then we would have to have a roll forward. Whether we have that activity and the expectations, that's something that we could consider doing. The other thing that several users had requested, some users, depending on geography, said have new business on the face of the financials. And as we went through it, we said rather than having new business on the face of the financials, to put that in the footnotes also as something that we were definitely considering.
Okay, thank you. Larry?
I must admit, when I first looked at this, I really thought example two was the best approach, like for a lot of the reasons Mark said. In hearing some of the comments about wanting a traditional income statement where you start with a big number and work your way down to a small number, I can appreciate that people want something like that, but like Darrell, you know, I think we'd have to have the breakdown, something like example two in the footnotes. I think the breakdown between the modified approach and the building block approach is absolutely essential, because I consider them to be, and I think this is still going to come back to us, but I think they're very different businesses, and I'd want to see that breakdown someplace. So if we decide to do it in the notes and keep this more traditional format in example three, you know, I'd be fine with that.
I think I would very much start from example three, and I would not be worried to consider that some of the premium earned might not be precisely the only way you could call it earned premium. And I agree there are one or the other life product where premium earned is a tricky number, but still consider you are talking about one industry out of others, and I would very much be concerned that we make it so specific that people say, well, not even volume can be compared to anyone else. Why should I touch it? So I would rather go through example three and try to keep it as much aligned with a traditional approach and get all the additional information, which is very valuable. You need to separate between the modified approach and the building block approach. You need to have new business information in, but get it into the notes or in the additional disclosure so that you make it and try to track one thing, which I think is important. The industry has been fairly good at having some key performance indicators, and we should make sure that key performance indicators for the industry can be calculated based on numbers we are requiring for the financial statements. Otherwise, you will force or you will put the industry on non-GAAP KPIs.
And I would say that is what we've done here. I mean, this is pretty close to a traditional statement, and the KPI with KPIs and with the thing different from the traditional statement is obviously adding, and this is what adds the complexity to it, is adding the release of the margins and then not having a big plug number. And so that's right.
Thank
But at that point, you need to make sure that you're not double counting, because incurred for a number of people would include some of the change of the margin. So you, there is some more work to be done.
Is it Tom or Floyd?
I understand why we might want to go to example three. I just think it misportrays what we're doing in the accounting. If you add one model that's a premium earned model that's really a revenue number with a cash flow number and put it together, I don't think we're portraying what's happening here. We've got a very specialized model for life, or the building block approach, that is not the same as every other company. Example two very carefully indicates that we're looking at difference in cash flow realization from expectations. And if we go to example three, we're portraying as if anyone that's a generalist, that top line number is revenue. No one else is going to read it but revenue and earned. And the two different types of premium due versus premium earned are drastically different. One is an earned concept. One is a cash flow concept. Putting them together in a line item, people are going to read that as revenue. I don't think we're going to be portraying the reality of the model by trying to make it look like every other company, which is example three. And so I'm strongly advocating example two and having actually the volume information come across as deviations from cash flow expectations, because that's what it is. It is not revenue. And I'm really concerned that we haven't made a decision as to what deposits are yet. Because if we don't do a good job in the building block approach, that premium due number is going to be blown up and even look like more revenue than it really is. And I don't think we're going to do a good job on the building, on unbundling. And so that number is going to look far larger than it really should.
Got to be more of an optimist.
Thank you. I have same concerns as Tom expressed. So the top line, in case of example three, top line premiums, it's not the revenue, but say people might understand it as a revenue. So that is my worry of the example three. And also that the, as Dell said, this example three should be followed with disclosure of the modified approach and the building block approach. So I wonder why we need a... example three looks simple, but by looking this, we can't get enough information, so we need some divided information, it seems to me. So it doesn't appeal to me. So I support the example two. It's a little bit contradictory, but I understand Stephen's point. Say in the example two, premium due is in the middle. It could start at the top of the building block approach. So it's just a location, and you can easily adjust it. So. Yeah, that is my thing.
And that is absolutely easily adjustable. The only reason why we did it that way was because of what the board had said before in regards to having, for the building block approach, having premiums due as the top line. People would look at that as revenue, so they wanted to have it further down. But it was really listening to the board on what we were hearing, and that can be moved to a...
Yeah, and last comment is example three in the... Fourth line, it's expected net changes in the liability for the period. So if this line, it seems to me that we need some detailed explanation of this line. And I could, but I'm not quite sure whether it's useful or not.
I think in all fairness, being a user of statements and getting a statement like in example one or two, the first thing I would try to do is to come up with something which obviously looks to be revenue, and I would add up the premium earned with the premium due. So getting me back to something similar to example three. So I think here we are solving a problem that we are creating first. What goes without saying for me is that we have to address the topic, what is premium in life with regard to the deposit component. And I think that has to be solved whichever approach you take, because otherwise you're always showing a volume number that doesn't make sense. You are under any of those models when you're going to a premium due, which I'm strongly opposed to. You are showing a number which you have to explain what it is if it's not revenue. So I think here in going for example three, the only thing is you make it a potentially better readable and expand it later on, whereas otherwise you say people, I expand it, and for you to get the whole picture, you always have to add up.
We're going to try and wrap this up by 10. So I'm going to, Daryl, you have your, fine, okay. Wigwell?
Yeah, I lean into example three, and as Steve explained, you know, traditionally we not present income statement based on the accounting methodology, not based on industry. Now this is the traditional ideas. And can I ask questions, you know, those, or maybe staff can explain to me. And Steve mentioned about, I also think about this, you know, if a financial conglomerate with insurance, banking, and other service, and they will have a consolidated financial statement. And of course, they will have supplementary disclosures and regulatory disclosure and others. If you have two sections of the income numbers, one is based on the building block and another one based on the modified approach, how can come out a consolidated financial statement with banking, insurance, and the other service, the major lines, let's assume, start with top lines?
I think we have a similar situation today, because the traditional insurance financial statement today has premiums, claims, benefits, comes down to a revenue number, and for banks, it comes down to really materiality and how material the insurance is, and if it is a margin number, that's a other income, hopefully, versus another loss number, and then that's broken out further, or where insurance is significant to a bank or to whoever, then they will have both sections in their financial statements typically. And so we have the same situation. I think today, I don't think this will complicate it much more, and we would need to take that into consideration, though.
Now, my question is, in the financial conglomerates, mm-hmm. with life and non-life service, currently or in the future, based on the proposed models, whether in the consolidated financial statement, they will split the insurance service based on the accounting method. This is my question.
So I guess the way I answered it before was if it was a bank and what they would do, if I'm an insurance company. And so there's different answers, obviously, all different situations. If I'm an insurance company and I have significant life and non-life, some of them do split it on the face financials. The way that they would split it, they don't come to an underwriting margin for different types of business. What they might do is premiums for life, for accidents, for health, benefits and claims, life, accident, and health. I mean, it just becomes a long statement. We would need to consider when you talk about banks and traditional, you know, the GEs of the world, how they would account for that.
So maybe just to clarify, I think we would be in example three, you would have premiums and then like sub items to them.
Right.
That's what a bank would do.
Yeah, what I want to emphasize is the number not based on the accounting methodology.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mark?
Tom said it very well, but I'm going to try to amplify it. Putting the two numbers together, two unlike numbers together, and putting it together just makes a mishmash of the whole thing. It obfuscates what's going on. You cannot put them together. I can't say this strongly enough. I don't think example three gives you the same KPIs. I don't think you get the combined ratio. You don't get the loss ratio. You'd have to then go to the footnotes. You cannot get the key information that you need to get. I'm struck by this, you know, throughout this project, I've been arguing for a revenue recognition model for this, and we went liability measurement, and now we're trying to make it look like a revenue recognition model. We have to go with what we've built, and you know, example two and example one at least break it out in a way that doesn't make it more of a black box. So I just don't think example three is a starter for me. Now, I absolutely agree with the point, and I'm glad Wade Gwu followed up on it, and Leslie brought it up too, if this is just an ancillary part of your business, how to deal with that. So I'm very sympathetic to that and curious as to how to do it. But I do not want to unravel the whole thing and make it look like example three for a company where this is 100% of their business.
I agree with Mark. Some of you may remember that we had a financial statement presentation project going on for a long time, and we did a lot of outreach on that. And two of the things that came through, I think, in that project when we did the outreach was that users wanted more disaggregation in the income statement, and they wanted cohesiveness between the statements. So they wanted to be able to clearly relate what was in the balance sheet to what they were seeing in the income statement, and they wanted more disaggregation. And to me, example two does a better job of that. I also agree with Tom, it would be nice if we could simplify the terminology in some way. I know that that's difficult because we've defined all of these terms very explicitly, and people who are specialists in this know what these terms are, have been using them for 100 years, and expect everyone else to know what they are too. But on balance, I would be inclined to go with example two.
Okay. The staff is looking for direction today, right, as opposed to, you know, specific endorsement of particular, so my question is, that you have a very broad question here. Do we tentatively agree with the recommendations, which are pretty sweeping, I think. I'm wondering, is it helpful if I first ask, are people supportive of the approach that provides more volume information? In other words, more of a traditional approach. Is that helpful as a first cut? In other words, as opposed to a margin presentation on the...
Right, because at this point we were still from the last meeting saying, are we going summarized or volume? And I think this one we're saying staff recommends absolutely going with volume based on everything we've all heard.
Okay. Amara?
Don't know if this would be helpful, but listen especially to the users. And Steve made a comment that he provided the staff with an additional model. So my question is, I'm leaning towards example three, but an expand or an enhanced, as I understood, example three, considering Steven's proposal. So I would like to hear from the staff, did you have time to analyze Steve's proposals, and how do you feel that Steve's proposals could fit considering the reaction of the board by now, because then I'll have a better...
Apologies for sending the latest one to Jennifer. That was an email exchange actually with the hub group more than anything else, because you know that they sent around a proposal while I modified their proposal. So that was that. But I did send staff various alternatives some months ago on this, and they were along similar lines. I wouldn't get your hopes up too much that there's a magic bullet in the emails that I've been sending around.
Okay.
And this does incorporate, I mean, the one difference here from the hub group is the premium is how we title, to Elke's point. And is there really a difference between calling it written or due? And we believe that it's a very similar number, and we can reconcile that. This has taken into consideration at least the previous ones that we had seen, Amara.
So I guess the threshold question is, do people agree to move off of a summarized margin approach? Yes, Tom.
I don't know how to vote on that, because if we put the volume information in there and make it look like revenue, I'm going to vote no. So it's tied to me in the vote as to how we present it. So I just want to raise the issue. I don't know how to vote on just a general question about putting it on without knowing how it's going to be represented.
Right. So I thought this vote was subject to further discussion of how to break out deposits, right?
Yeah, it will be on how to.
It's not just deposits.
We have clearly stated that we do not want to recognize. We have clearly stated in the memo and in this that we would not call this revenue. We do not come down to a revenue sum, and that we will be, that there is a distinction there, especially for on the building block approach, where we've heard loud and clear from the board on that.
Deposits are really important to me in this vote, but method three is really important to me in this vote. It looks like it's going to be revenue, and I can't vote for moving out of a summarized margin approach to a gross-up approach if we're going to portray it as it's revenue. So I can't vote for this if I don't know what the presentation's going to be.
I think I'm asking at this point, without locking into any of the examples, do you want to move off of a summarized margin approach?
And I don't know how to vote unless I know how you're going to present it.
Okay. Yes, Andrea?
Can I add one thing to consider? If you do gross up and put volume information on the face of the statement of comprehensive income, I take Jennifer's point entirely that we're not going to portray this as revenue, but at the end of the day, you'll have a bigger number and a smaller number. We do not say you have to call something revenue or not. So there is nothing in our literature which would say that just because you have a bigger number, it can't be called revenue or anything like that. So if your worry is that having that bigger number on the statement of comprehensive income could be portrayed as revenue and people could read it as that, then I think that's a valid concern, because it doesn't matter what we see in it. At the end of the day, you're going to have a bigger number, a smaller number. And someone who doesn't follow insurance closely, hasn't been following this project closely, is naturally going to assume that that's revenue. That's what the volume information is there. And that's why people want it up there.
And that's why I'm objecting to example three, because it's going to be read as revenue. It's going to be added to a revenue number under the modified approach, and they're going to read it as revenue.
But under both examples, A and B, you would add up the two numbers and call it revenue. What else would you as a non-special?
I'm arguing for example two with better labels, that that's a cash flow deviation, volume information. And we make clear that what premiums do means. That's what I'm arguing for. Premiums do, if you write it just as premiums do, they're not going to know the difference between the word earned and due.
Can I just... It seemed, okay, whatever. So I guess that means that... Can I just quickly add to Tom's point, because from the outreach perspective, I mean, we are all the users are clear that in life insurance that's not purely revenue, but still there's a revenue component in there. So it is important to see which premiums are closer to revenue and which not. But we need to make sure that there is some revenue in it. It's not that there's nothing.
But you are coming back on deposits, right?
Yes. Based on this, yes, we will. Sure.
When you all ask analysts which of these three examples would best help them update their earnings models, which one would they pick?
Well, we went out to them with the other four or five models that we had and the alternatives, and this incorporated the feedback and obviously had been brought to the board, so we can bring this back to them. But we do feel, rather than doing and all of us sending them out to, you know, three dozen, four dozen users, that this does prevent it. Everything we've heard.
With this one.
Which one?
Which one? I have my answer. I just didn't. I mean, to me, it's number two.
I think two provides the most information, obviously, and then it's a matter of, you know, the reason for three was three looks more like a traditional one and where you go from premiums down.
It's so noble two, goals yes. to help the generalists. It won't do it. It's what affects the earnings models. It's
yes.
Okay.
Andrea, did you want to get in?
Yeah, I just wanted to add as another thought that these difficulties which you're struggling with today are what led you to the summarized margin approach in the first place. When we talked to users, a lot of them said they didn't mind whether it was on the face or in the notes. They want the level of disaggregation which you wouldn't naturally expect to see in the statement of comprehensive income on the face anyway, and they're going to have to look at the notes anyway. What matters to them is that information is there, that you do get that volume information, that they do get that disaggregation. Although the comment letters had a very large call for the volume information, it wasn't a complete blanket universal. There were people who did support the volume the summarized margin approach. And a number of users have said to me that as they didn't like the idea at first, but as they sort of thought through the difficulties, they got used to it. They got to do it. And things move on. People's views develop. And it's a very new presentation, and it's worth remembering that it takes people time to get there, I think.
And I think just one thing to add to that is for those users, because I think the vast majority did say they want the volume information on the face, not in the footnotes, that was not acceptable to many of them. But when we talked to them further was, well, they go to the segment information. And then we struggle with, well, if you go to the segment information and you have only summarized margin on the face, that means your segment information should only be summarized margin because it's supposed to total up. So if you look at the segment information with the detail, and you get down into it when you're talking to the users, they want essentially that volume information. They look at it on a segment basis, which would obviously translate to the face having the detail.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to take John's suggestion and see if we have leanings toward example. I didn't hear any support for example one. So leanings between example two and example three. We ready? So I'm going to test who would support the presentation and implicitly the approach to describing what I think was going to be perceived as revenue in example two.
Which board?
ISB. Sorry.
Two, three, six,
seven.
Seven.
Seven. And how about on the FASB example two?
Two, three,
two, three, five. Okay, that's five. Would it be in bounds for me to ask who on the IASB would object?
Seven.
I could easily vote for two in the interest of going out with a single model. Mark's point, to the extent that you know you have an operation that this is their entire business versus somebody who is consolidated or who is a conglomerate,
where I think you know all that detail is just unwieldy. I mean, I think it is a good example too. So I have no objections to that. My concern though is the feedback I heard, which may be a little bit different from what you know we're hearing the staff articulate, is that a traditional approach, albeit in the context of how we're defining premiums and deposits in this model, is what they prefer. And it is also one I think the industry group has rallied around as well. So I think maybe with the definition of deposits, we can get to an approach that on the income statement will be satisfactory for comparisons with traditional non-insurance entities, other financial institutions, and then in the notes, disaggregate this information. But, you know, trying to do too much on the face of the income statement is my big concern here.
Can I suggest if the ISB is tight like that, we move forward under two since FASB's gone that way, and then we see if how we get on. Would that be okay? Who would object to that?
Two, three.
Three. Okay. Steve, also one. But he won't be here either.
You know, we only in our world we only have a standard of financial statement presentation, and the required items are so limited and obviously not applicable to banks and others. And we don't have special requirements of financial statements for industries. And we have no problem at all by now. You know, the airlines have more line items, banks have more line items, and we never think this is against our requirements. May I suggest, you know, we keep these two together. My idea is for conglomerates, as we discussed, you know, naturally you split so many items, it's very hard to consolidate. But on the other hand, if it is a pure life companies, they split more items, no problem at all. If an insurance company have both angles, and life and non-life, if they think it's useful to have Model 2, I will accept. But on the other hand, I can also accept Model 3.
So just one point on that, Weiku, is even a conglomerate today, and even under this approach, won't have almost any of the line items, even in Example 3, because they'll summarize it down to one. And so we will need to come back to you with that.
The supplementary information, no problem at all. But as I said, we don't have specialized presentation requirement for industry. And I don't think it's necessary for us to limit a particular methodology which may not fit everybody.
Okay, Elton?
I would strongly support what Weiku said, and I think what nicely fits into what Stephen had said in the beginning. We need to define what we want to have as minimum disclosure, but we shouldn't get carried away to make this a financial statement presentation project for the insurance industry where we don't have any of this for any other industry. So I think we should come to a conclusion what is the minimum we want to see, subject it is a conglomerate where this is a totally immaterial industry, and what additional margin information, all of that which is very valid, we want to have in the notes, or if you're a specialized life company, you might expand on all of that on your financial statement. But I think I'm a bit concerned that if we go for Model 2, we are making an insurance contracts project, an insurance financial statement presentation project.
Okay, we're going to have to close off pretty quickly.
I was going to say perhaps the tension point is not so much Model 2 or Model 3, but rather in the building. Exactly. And to me, I voted for 2 because I didn't want the building block volume information to be depicted as premium revenue. I think it's an important metric. I think that's what a lot of people vote for. Maybe that's where the tension point is and not so much 2 and 3.
Exactly. It's a premium issue.
So does that give the staff direction? I think the majority of the FASB and half so I think of the ISB are signaling a particular approach to premium or to revenue. Excuse me.
And so what we'll do is we'll come back with some drafting of that if we're coming back with this and what is a minimum requirement and what would be the information that we would expect to see included.
Okay. I think that's as far as we can take that today.
Can I say one thing is what Weiku is pointing out is it's a quite difficult issue to solve because the premium information is provided in some way and it should not be treated as a revenue. So the sort of the consolidated information is a totally different animals, how to deal with that. So that issue is another issue I think we should discuss from the different perspective, I think.
Okay, I think that's it for today. Adam and Brian, thanks very much for getting up early to join us. We're going to move into revenue recognition next. I beg your pardon. It's impairment.
Okay. 15 minutes.
Okay, let's take 15 minutes.
15 minute break.
Yeah. Oh, no. I was going to say 10 minutes. I mean, I think that we
got to where maybe most people have been referred to.
Essentially, it's that building block one. It's all jammed in there, if you will.
almost like that one number is all the building blocks in one, or you can look at it as just building block number one.
Yeah, I think the reason why some may like to separate it is because the people that are going to be in the modified approach will tend to be the short duration contract people. And by, as you know, that if everything is in effect in building blocks one, that does give you a different result than bifurcating the components, which is in the building blocks. And so I think from that perspective, it may be helpful on the face to at least distinguish between those two.
If you say you're not going to explicitly visit that, then what we call building block one for operational contract in theory, you know, just cash flow, on this aspect.
Well, yeah, in theory, right? In theory.
So, I mean,
at the end of the day, it really does come down to the organization structure, because even if you're in the GE where none of it shows up in the face, but if you are an AIG that has both, or a company, and anyone who has both life and P&C business, you have those two different measurement approaches, modified approach. So for them, they may want to separate it versus one that's primarily life or primarily P&C. You're only going to get the one.
That's what the user is. Oh, right. Absolutely.
Well, they're going to want to see. Only because it ends up getting too summarized.
Correct.
But unless you're a pure insurance entity, you know, you probably could do this on the face, because if that's all you do, I mean, Northwestern Mutual, from our perspective,
yeah, that's different.
You know, that's all you can have. And so to do an example two, because if you wouldn't have anything in modified, because everything would be building blocks, and we'd only have that section, and so we would do everything on the face, and then the segments break up by our
micro segments. I guess I was just getting the sense that the generalist professional investor more disaggregation on the leading more questions.
I think the portfolio, they can,
right.
Except for the
portfolio.
Yeah,
exactly.
But I think the linkage, what we were also hearing as well, is, you know, the segment information is where they tend to focus.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so the key is, to what extent should the segment information
trying to get better.
I know. I've been running notes, and I realize I've got big gaping holes. I'm just going to start doing it in the folder she gives us. And give her a folder back. But so, actually, it's the leases. The sublease, all staff recommendations, no one's going to comment on that. But the...
Having two sections.
12 months plus the disclosure.
Disclosure
was just a one. We're going to talk about it later. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm so strong. That's why even three could have some error.
Disclosure.
Definitions or guidance on whatever it was. That's the most important key.
Steve, I'll send some emails.
Oh, good for you. Do you have breakfast in the room?
I do, yeah. Okay. I'm going to see if it was still three the way it used to be.
This time it was supposed to be. At least mine was. Well,
but you don't have a Marriott that used to be a service and then count that.
Oh, really?
I wasn't sure if they were doing that still, so I wanted to take a look.
Good morning.
That was the first thing that talked to me.
It's also the time of heart. I prefer.
You know, if there's room, I think that's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Because on the projects, I don't think
just on
the
projects.
Yeah.
I asked Peter if he could just check with CPS time because I'm not sure what the protocol was.
Yes, it was.
Barry?
Do you want a chance to win the first prize in the
competition? It's in the boardroom.
So you're comfortable with that?
I am.
Yeah, the project manager. Okay.
Well,
I asked Peter to check with Sue, but they're oatcakes.
Not shortbreads.
No sugar whatsoever.
I have a candy bar.
I have other things too. If you're comfortable with that, then I will have him check his suit.
Oh, you already found out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can do
that. We're talking about something sensitive. I think that we would have them come for those specific sections.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, whatever it is, 6, 7.
Right.
Any
advances?
Voicemail, and you know, it came through the email system. Sorry, you know, it just occurred to me is I got an email that told me I had a voicemail. It just occurred to me that makes the voicemail retrievable. In other words,
I know it does. I don't like that at all.
I don't like that either.
That was weak. That PMC.
The file. So you guys were talking about that the other day. It hadn't occurred to me.
Here, it sends the file.
Right. Which I was saying how much I like, but it never occurred to me that it makes it retrievable.
Unless you don't care. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I want to like that.
That looks really nice.
Thanks. I decided to do a change. Some changes. Is that an extra glass?
It is, certainly.
Can I use it? Thank you.
I went to the
I think it's given that we need to go to
the table. We were talking, I came in on Cal, that's why I was worried.
Oh, the reason was because an entity policy.
Right.
Well, no. They
would say as a practical expedient, an entity may.
So that's what they're going to work. But they're going to do it on a, you can't do it on an elite basis because the scope of this is contract by contract. But anyway. They're going to work on class. They want to do it by class.
Sorry. Okay. Fair enough. I just don't think it can be a piece of paper. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
It's a simple.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jana and I are both going to do it, so Jana's going to start off.
No. Did you before?
Yeah, I thought so too that they would just assume, but then.
Is this yours, maybe?
The glass? Oh, no. No, I think it's whoever's sitting here.
Okay. I should check first.
Yeah. There's some empty glasses over there. That's fine.